97.5, The Fanatic.
That's right. You know what that sound means. It's Connor Thomas here with you on another lovely Saturday night right here on 97.5, The Fanatic. I've got you 7 to 10 p.m. closing out our programming for the night here on The Fanatic. And what a beautiful night to be with all of you. I mean, it's not as beautiful as last night. How could I possibly follow up what James Harden and the Philadelphia 76ers did in Minneapolis, Minnesota last night in that basketball game? My goodness, if you haven't missed it, we're going to recap what went on. We're going to talk about some interesting stuff, some interesting storylines, where it leaves the Sixers. But I can't do justice to what Cuz Anthony Gargano does from 10 to 2 every day during the week. But man, I feel like I want to come in here and give you my best Anthony Gargano impression, because how could you not be fired up after what you saw last night, starting at 8 p.m., ending a little bit after 10 p.m., well, further past 10 p.m. than we thought because of all the fouls that got called in favor of the Sixers. But my goodness, man, they go out and they win 133. 133. 133 points to 102. Beautiful 31-point victory. There's James Harden in his debut, which we waited forever for. You think, oh, he's going to be rusty. Comes out and just drops 27, 12 assists, 8 rebounds, almost a triple-double. Probably would have had one if the game wasn't in hand by the time they got halfway through the fourth quarter. It was in hand prior to that. Tyrese Maxey, how is he going to fit with James Harden? Oh, well, he's just going to drop 28 points. Oh, Joel Embiid, well, he's going to have to give up some of his shots because Harden's going to take some of those shots. Yeah, no, he just drops 34. Matisse Thybulle, who he's going to be a bit of the conversation that we're having tonight that we jump into our main topic here in just a second. He goes and gets you 11, even though people think he can't play offense at all. And you're probably right on that. And this is probably an anomalistic performance from him. But he goes and gets you 11. He has an awesome putback jam before halftime, right before the buzzer. Tobias Harris, a quiet night, only 6 points, which is kind of a cool thing to me, too, because that shows you he gave you basically nothing. Last night, he was still a plus 24, and if he picks it up, I don't know where he could have picked it up last night because, frankly, there just wasn't enough points to go around to spread out with how much other people are scoring, but it shows you that there's even a higher level that can be reached by this team when Tobias gives you the 17, 18, the 20-point performance that you'd expect from a guy, a player of his caliber. All of that to say, last night was awesome. And it showed me a little bit of something that I have to disagree with a show that was on earlier with Tyrone Johnson and Hunter Brody, who I love listening to on my Saturday mornings. And we'll get into that in 1 second. But first, man, Dan Fritz, who's on the board tonight, why don't we roll a nice little montage of last night's action for the people, just so you could feel the energy that I got coursing through me right now, the energy you all had last night watching that game that you've probably had all day and hopefully we have for the rest of the NBA season here in Philadelphia. Let's hit it.
Embiid to Harden, Harden on a drive, James Harden into the lane, puts it up and good. His first basket as a Sixer, Harden on a drive, banks it in, and a foul on Minnesota. And Harden is going to the line for what could be a three-point play. Now here's Harris on the move into the lane, kick to the corner, Harden for three, left-handed shot, it's pure, it's good. Harden with the great touch, good kick out there by Tobias, Harden with his first three as a Sixer, and the Sixers once again go up by 10. Steal by Maxey, run out, Beverly's there, Tyrese sidesteps him and twists off the board with a right hand, reverse and good. Tyrese Maxey, steal, score, he's got 10, Sixers 47, the Wolves 34. And Harden leaks it out with a pass, Thybulle with a jab, Matisse Thybulle with a two-hand throwdown, and another dish by Harden from midcourt, Russell with an ill-advised shot, Sixers get a run-out jam, Harden with his fourth assist, Thybulle four in a row. Step back three, got it, Harden a laser, and that's good. And the Sixers lead 84-59. Seriously, that last play by Harden, you're like, oh, late clock, man, I don't know if there's enough arc on it. Well, he just rips it through the net. And again, his release, the backspin, it is pure. Ball goes to Matt. Who's got Max? He's wide open for three, and he nails a triple. Harden with his 12th assist, three-point field goal. Maxie Skippy with joy to the huddle. And the Sixers 120, the Wolves 93.
What a couple of calls from our own Tom McGinnis on the radio broadcast of last night's game. My goodness. If that doesn't get you excited, you don't have a pulse. If that game last night didn't get you going, I don't know what you're following sports for. That was a beautiful moment. And the reason that I wanted to play that little montage and go back to last night is that tonight I want this, above all else, to be a celebratory show. It's 7:06 p.m. right now, Eastern Standard Time. This time, last night, we did not know what the Philadelphia 76ers were going to look like with James Harden. We did not know if the team would be rusty coming off of an All-Star break. We did not know if a man who had struggled with hamstring issues and had not played since February 2nd and was going into his 23rd straight day of no NBA live basketball competition, and James Harden, of course, who we're talking about, we didn't know what he would look like. And then they come out and they give us that. That is the most excited I've been over a regular season basketball game in quite some time. And man, over all else, 610-632-0975. That's how you get in with us tonight. I want to hear how excited that made you. Because I know there's people who are still buzzing, like me. Like I can see Dan is back there dancing to the music, enjoying that montage. I know you guys have the high energy, and there's a great reason for it. But, of course, and this is not a bad but, there are questions still about this team. They did not earn a parade last night. They did not win the NBA Finals last night. They did not clinch a seating in the playoffs. They didn't even beat a team that's really all that good. Minnesota's a solid team, but not the ilk of the competitors that they're going to have to go through to reach where they want to be, which is the Eastern Conference winners, the NBA Finals winners, and the champions of the NBA this year. So, my main question coming out, and I talked about it a little bit before we got into that montage, teased it a little bit for you. Tyrone Johnson and Hunter Brody were on this morning. Great show. You should catch them every Saturday morning, 9 to noon. It's a wonderful program. And they were talking about the starting lineup. And we had this discussion waiting for James Harden. And I saw enough last night. This starting lineup, which last night was James Harden, Tyrese Maxey, Tobias Harris, Matisse Thybulle, Joel Embiid, should not be touched the rest of the way. Short of injury, short of rest for Joel Embiid, short of like management for James Harden if he's working back in. And he seemed good to go. But short of anything that's availability, I do not want to see a different starting lineup at any point in the remaining 23 games that the Philadelphia 76ers have this regular season and in the playoffs. Now, Tyrone and Hunter were talking about rotating guys in, trying different things. One of the things that they brought up was looking at the matchups. If you need to space the floor a little bit better, maybe you take Matisse out and it's a Danny Green start, or it's a George Niang start. Or maybe if you have more need with the bench unit and you think you could really take advantage of a team that's not that deep, you sit Tyrese Maxey, you run him with a second unit. And instead you start Matisse still, but then you replace with, I don't know, a Furkan Korkmaz or a George Niang or a Danny Green, one of those guys. I don't want to see it. I want the starting lineup to be set. And my reasoning for this is, 23 games is not all that much time in this grand scheme of NBA teams coming together. One of the things that has been talked about with this new big three, or it might even be a big four now, I don't know where Tobias Harris is in this equation, because Maxey goes out and gets you 28 last night. The big three was assumed to be Tobias, James Harden, Joel Embiid. And now it seems like Maxey, in his second year in the NBA at the ripe old age of 21 years old, has already overtaken that spot. But of course, it's only one game. My point being, when we compare them to other big threes, and my main two in this example are the Miami Heat in 2010, 2011, which was the first season of LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and the Boston Celtics, coached by one Doc Rivers, back in 2007, 2008, the first year of Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen. That Heat team lost in the finals. The Boston Celtics team won the finals that year. You look at their first 24 games, which is how much the Sixers have with the James Harden iteration of this team prior to going into the playoffs and playing winner-go-home basketball. That Miami team in 2010-2011, they went 16-8. which it would be underachieving, I think, if the Sixers did that, considering what they have talent-wise and already the MVP of the league in Joel Embiid, or the assumed MVP. I'd put good green American money on that right now if I was you. But they went 16-8. They finished out 58-24. So they picked it up down the stretch, but they got off to a very, very slow start by the standards of three future Hall of Famers. It takes time to gel. On the other hand, the Boston Celtics in 2007-2008, they put together an incredible season start to finish. They won 66 games in that regular season. They started off 21-3. You learn a lot. Both of those numbers, the 16-8 for the Heat turned into a 58-24. They ended up losing the finals. They ended up underachieving by their standards, but still having a great year. The Celtics, though, you learn from those first 24 games, and it probably didn't even take the full 24, that team was a legitimate title contender. It's so important to learn what you have and to use it to get used to these pieces being in the same spot. I don't want to see rotations. I don't want to see Doc experimenting. I want to see the five guys that are going to be your most played players in Joel Embiid, James Harden, Tyrese Maxey, Tobias Harris, and Matisse Thybulle locked into that starting lineup the rest of the way, because I think every game that they start together is critical for that chemistry that they're going to need when they start playing the Milwaukees, the Brooklyns, the Miamis, hell, even the Bostons. Boston has been hot recently. These are the teams that they're going to need as much experience as possible. 23 games after last night being completed is not all that much. That's why I would not change around the starting lineup. Now, I understand that there's a lot of you out there, and I've heard your calls on this as we've gone through, and I've done shows preparing for James Harden, and I've been on with the John Kincaid Show in the morning, filling in on the Mike Missanelli Show a couple times this past week, and I've heard you guys call in and voice your concerns about, well, I want this guy to start. Well, I don't know if Thybulle can do this. Well, I don't know if Danny Green can do that. Well, I don't know if Furkan Korkmaz gives you anything. So 610-632-0975. I'd love to hear from you if you want to see Doc experiment. If you disagree and you want to see a different starting lineup out there. If you think, after even what we saw last night and how awesome that game was, that there's still a level above that can be reached by starting another player. Or if you agree with what Tyrone and Hunter were saying, that the matchups are going to determine game to game how Doc Rivers runs a starting lineup. I'd love to hear from you and hear your argument on that. Because me, I'm standing pat now. Dan, appreciate you being with us on the Saturday night and running everything back there behind the glass. How do you feel about the starting lineup? Are you sticking with it? Are you going on a game-by-game basis? What would you do if you were Doc Rivers with the starting lineup in this final 23 games of the Sixers regular season?
Okay, with 23 games, obviously you don't have much time to play around with it, per se. I will give you as far as no rotation. However, I got to lean a little more towards Tyrone and Hunter as far as situational-wise and matchup, but also as well, if nothing else, I would draw the line in the sand and say, okay, three games. Of the three possible who might be a rotation, I want to see what those three look like, and then from there, whatever the best one is, because we don't know if we saw the best last night. As you said before, they really didn't hit one of the top teams in the league. We don't know what's going to happen. So last night's starting five, is that going to be as good for another night? We don't know.
No, we don't. And the Timberwolves aren't a bad team. They didn't play Oklahoma City. They didn't play the Detroit Pistons. They didn't play the Orlando Magic. Like, they played a team that probably will be a playoff team in the West. Is probably a year or two away from really being in that deep playoff run stratosphere. But they have nice pieces. Carl Anthony Towns, we know what he is as a scorer of the basketball. They have Anthony Edwards, one of the great young players in the game right now. D'Angelo Russell, Pat Bev, who decided last night his main mission in that game was to just take as many blocking fouls from the biggest guys on the court as possible. Like, man, God bless who's ever giving him an ice bath or a massage after the game, because he sure needs it after his performance. But they're not a terrible team. My point is just we don't have the full picture. It's very easy. And that's why I led with I want this to be a celebratory show. Because I'm not trying to take away anything at all from what we saw last night. That was a game that we waited through years of the process for. That was the type of game that you tore everything down, traded a former Rookie of the Year, Michael Carter Williams, cut everything out at the roots and restarted this organization over. Whatever your thoughts on the process are, that's not the argument tonight. But going through all that, that was a culmination of everything Sixers fans had gone through to get to the point where you can trade assets to have one of the top 75 players in NBA history, a future Hall of Famer in James Harden, added to a homegrown MVP-level guy in Joel Embiid. So I'm not trying to take away anything from that, but it's important to note, work is still yet to be done, and it starts, for me, with that starting five and how Doc Rivers decides he's going to handle that, because those five players, whoever you think they may be and whoever Doc thinks they may be and whoever ends up actually filling those roles for the Sixers, they're going to be the most important pieces that determine whether or not this team hoists the Larry O'Brien trophy in a couple months. So let's jump in on the phones here. Kevin from Philly is going to be our first caller for the night. Hey, Kevin, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Hey, man, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Kevin. How about yourself?
Listen, just like the majority of Sixers fans, I'm still a little giddy.
How could you not be?
From last night, I haven't got you know what, this is the first time since, man, this is the first time probably since we had Iverson that I really had butterflies in my stomach, anticipating really, this was a game. This wasn't even a playoff series. It was just a game, a meaningless regular season game, and I had butterflies in my stomach when it was getting ready to come on.
Yeah, man, it was amazing. And you're right, they could have lost this game, no problem, and it wouldn't have mattered at all in the grand scheme of things. But we're zoned into it like it's the damn Super Bowl, the Game 7 of the finals, like the World Series. That's amazing.
Tuned in, man. So I had two points I wanted to make. One was about the starting lineup. I'm up in the air. I did like what I seen out of the starting lineup last night, but I am a little up in the air because I do realize you do want to experiment a little bit to find what the best five would be, but at the same time, we only got 23 games left, so you can't do too much experimenting. Like, you have to find what you think works, and then you have to give those guys time to gel together. But I just think it works out with Thybulle. My concern with Thybulle was his offense. Like, I think that if Ben Simmons was still the point guard, I wouldn't want Thybulle starting, because you can't have two guys on the court that aren't scoring threats.
You're absolutely right.
I think with Max, with that backcourt of Harden and Maxey, I think that kind of allows Thybulle to sort of get away with, I would say, to get away with not, you know, really scoring at a high level, because, you know, because of his defense. And you need that active defense out there. I mean, I'm not a big Danny Green fan. I know Danny Green is supposed to be a 3-and-D guy. I don't see Danny, in my opinion, I don't see Danny Green sticking too much quality defense lately. Maxey is a young and energetic defender. He has active hands. I think he had four steals last night, but he's not anybody who I would qualify as being a two-way player. So you need Thybulle out there, you know, for his defense, and so that you can put him on, you know, the whoever the best scorer is on the other team, 1 through 3, so Maxey doesn't have to exert too much energy, or Harden, you know, has to exert too much energy either on that guy. And you can put Thybulle on him and slow him down and let Maxey and Harden do their thing.
Kev, I'm absolutely with you, man. I appreciate the call. You enjoy the rest of your night. I'm with Kev. That's why I like Matisse Thybulle in there. And here's the thing. Here's what I'm going to say. And if you listen to 97.5 The Fanatic, and you've heard me before, you know where I stand on Matisse Thybulle. You know I'm a huge Matisse Thybulle fan, more so than most anyone you'll hear talk about the Sixers in any capacity. I love the kid. I think the way that he defends on the basketball court, he could arguably be, he was all defensive second team last year, so he's one of the top 10 best defenders on the planet. But I think he's the best perimeter defender in the game of basketball right now. But here's what I'll say. In fairness, there's a new era of Sixers basketball that started last night. You can say what you want about Matisse Thybulle and Tobias Harris and Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey prior to. And some of those guys, like Joel Embiid, is going to be Joel Embiid. Tobias Harris, for the most part, even though we didn't see it last night, is going to be Tobias Harris. Tyrese Maxey's young, but it seems like you can count on him to be the guy. But we've got to go off what we've seen with James Harden, because now we don't have to worry about it anymore. James Harden is a Sixer. He will be a Sixer the rest of the year. So we've got to look at what this team is with him. Not we have to, we get to. It's such a cool opportunity to look at this guy and be like, now we can see these guys in a different light, how good they could be with this caliber of a player helping facilitate and run the offense. And in the James Harden era, we got one game, incredibly small sample size. These Thibodeau's averaging 11 points a game. I know I'm cherry picking there a little bit, but he looked like he opened up the offense, James Harden, that is. And guys like Maxey, who was already scoring at a great clip, but also guys like Matisse, had more opportunities. And that's something that we're going to talk to a little bit later in the show about the opportunities that were open last night and what it could mean for the Sixers offense going forward. Let's go to Oz next in West Philly. Oz, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
What's going on out there?
What's up, man?
Oz.
How you doing this night?
I'm doing fine. I'm listening to y'all. I'm 50, so I've been around. To me, defense wins cheap chips. That's no question about that. So whenever you got a perimeter defensive player out there, you got a good chance with a chip any given night. And now we got a game maker. I think he had like 12 assists last night.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, so we got two superstars out there, and all this is going to take time. I don't think it's going to take two times for these two superstars to get the game. They're smart. They're intelligent. We saw that last night. You know what I mean? So, I mean, and no, they wasn't playing nobody of true consequence, but, you know, for their first game, they seem like they've been playing for a while.
Right. It didn't look like they were brand new teammates. Some of the stuff was just, like, incredible because their games fit so well, right, Oz? Like, when you see a Harden, just on paper, Harden and Embiid looks like their games are a perfect match. But we saw it last night in real life.
Agree. The maturity and their skill level, you know what I mean? Understanding where to be at, understanding where the double team's at. And we saw the gameplay, how he was just dropping dimes to players slashing. Now, I will say that Tobias Harris has to make himself seen. He's going to have to. If not, he's going to disappear. It's going to disappear if you don't make yourself seen. You know what I mean? But I'm sure the Sixers will find some way to, you know, set the tone for him to get in there. But as we see, the slashers, they get into the court. It's crazy. It's crazy.
It really is. So, Oz, talk to me about the starting lineup. You changing anything? Are you cool with sticking with the five they started last night for the rest of the season and riding with those guys?
Again, I'm going to speak for maturity. You have to go night to night. Everybody make adjustments. I remember, I'll take you back to when Jordan passed to Kerr, and Kerr made that shot, and all of a sudden, Kerr's one great player all of a sudden. But yeah, not to take nothing from Kerr, not to take nothing from you.
But, I got you. But he's not MJ.
It's all agreed. And MJ made him a star.
I got you, Oz. I appreciate the call, man. You enjoy the rest of your Saturday night. Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, adjustments are key in this league. Matchups are very, very key. Now, I think the Sixers are so talented in that starting five that the matchups, I mean, they're going to be in their favor regardless of who that fifth starter is, because you're not sitting Tobias, you're not sitting Harden, you're not sitting Embiid. And I think we've gotten to the point, especially after what we saw last night and really what we've seen over the course of this season and his incredible improvement, you're not sitting Tyrese Maxey, in my opinion. I don't think, even for what he could do for the bench unit, he's just so valuable to get as many minutes as he does. And I think the way that he plays in transition with James Harden, which I don't know about you, Dan, I was not expecting. When you think about James Harden, he does so many things well. He plays the game of basketball so well-rounded. He gets so much credit as a scorer and even as a facilitator, but you think about that in the half-court game. I was not expecting him to come out and be as good in transition with Maxey and Thibodeau pushing that ball up the floor, doing not like the outlet pass, but the secondary skip pass down to under the basket. So that kind of stuff, you can't sit Maxey. So it's really a question of what do you do with that fifth starter role? Is Matisse that guy? Do you rotate it through? I think you stick with it, but we've already heard from Oz, who thinks that they need to switch it up matchup base. Maybe you agree with him, 610-632-0975. We got till 10 p.m. for your opinion to be heard. You can join us right at that number here on 97.5 The Fanatic. I am Connor Thomas with you until 10 right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Just about 8 o'clock here on Saturday night on 97.5 The Fanatic. I'm Connor Thomas, Dan Fritz running the board for you. And we are talking, of course, about that awesome Sixers game from last night. All your reactions from it, everything you think about what was the highest rated, Dan, I'm not sure if you saw this, the highest rated Philadelphia 76ers regular season broadcast since 2001. I mean, it was incredible. The TV numbers were through the roof. Basically, if you have a television set and you're in the greater Philadelphia area, you were tuned into one thing last night. And it was that debut of James Harden in Minnesota. It was incredible. We played the montage of Tom McGinnis' calls. They were incredible calls. The TV broadcast was insane. Like, you could not have put together a more perfect debut for James Harden than what we all had the pleasure of witnessing last night. And I was telling you before the break, I had the pleasure of sitting next to a Timberwolves fan and my younger brother, Chase, while he watched that and seeing his reactions and everything. And it kind of hit me last night. And another thing today, Dan, that I did, I don't know if you saw this. I went to the Union home opener. The Union opened their season today. They had a 1-1 tie against, they played Minnesota too. I don't know why we always like play the same cities in different sports. Either way, they had a 1-1 tie, and I was at the Union game, and I heard the song that they sing all the time, the Sons of Ben, the No One Likes Us, We Don't Care song. That, of course, you heard Jason Kelce scream during his Super Bowl parade speech. And I listened to that. And it made me realize how I wanted this Sixers team to be viewed. I want the rest of the NBA and the fans of other teams in the NBA to absolutely hate this Sixers team. I want them to be loathed. I want them to be booed from the second they show up in a rival city to the second they get on the bus to go back to the airport. I want the complaints on Twitter. I want other fans calling in at 610-632-0975 to get on and complain about, oh, it was the refs, and it was this, that, and the other thing. And, oh, Harden's not that good, and Embiid's not that good, and you don't really have enough depth, and, oh, Doc Rivers isn't a good enough coach. I want all the hate in the world. Exactly. I want all of the crybabies and complainers. Now, you know, there are two different ways you can go about being a team that makes a championship run, which is what, of course, we're all looking forward to and expecting from this Sixers team, especially after last night. You can be what we saw this year in the NFL, where we ended up with two teams in the Los Angeles Rams and the Cincinnati Bengals that were, I think, pretty widely well-liked across the country. The Rams, mostly because you're looking at, like, Aaron Donald, maybe the best defensive player of all time, doesn't have a ring, had a chance to get one. Matt Stafford, who endured over a decade of time with the Detroit Lions in a terrible organization, finally gets out and had a chance to win the Super Bowl and ended up winning the Super Bowl in his first year out of that organization. And he didn't run from anything. He gave Detroit his heart, and then he got the opportunity to go somewhere else. And, of course, on the other side, you had Joe Cool, Joe Scheisty, Joe Burrow, who everyone fell in love with as the young, up-and-coming, exciting quarterback. You had a very likable Bengals team that was like, they're not supposed to be here yet. They have this personality. They have this charismatic leader under center. And there's likable teams like that. I don't want the Sixers to be a likable team. I want them to be the villain. I want them to be absolutely hated. And something about it just feels right. Watching other teams' fans, I saw it with my brother last night, complain and complain and complain about the number of free throws, the number of fouls that are going to be drawn and earned by James Harden and Joel Embiid and that duo is going to be incredible. The Sixers last night, 36 free throw attempts. Best part, they made 30 of them. So 83.3% from the line. Hey, that'll get the job done. But the fact that they're going to go ahead and get like 35 to 40 free throws a night and just make games super long. You're not going to be able to play Philadelphia and get out of that game like 2 hours and 15 minutes, 2.5 hours. No, it's going to be like a 3 hour game as you watch Joel Embiid and James Harden saunter to the line and rip your team's heart out. And then you know what's going to happen? If you don't foul him, James Harden's going to hit that step back three in your face like he did to Karl Anthony Towns and like he did to the Minnesota Timberwolves multiple times last night. I want to be able to feel the rage of other fan bases as the Sixers run through the NBA. And that begs the question, like maybe I'm crazy. This is my personal preference, of course, and you can feel free to disagree. And I want to hear from people out there. I want to hear from you Sixers fans. Do you care how the rest of the league views this team? Is this something that you care about at all? And is the feeling...
I would say no.
Okay, and Dan weighs in. And is the feeling of a great season, is it improved by how others outside of Philly react to the success? Is it more fun because when the Eagles won Super Bowl 52, it felt like a lot of people were on the Eagles' side. It felt like the large majority was, okay, Tom Brady and the Patriots, they've been around enough. They've won enough. This Eagles team is charismatic. They're fun. They got the likable backup quarterback. It's an incredible story. And something about knowing the rest of the NFL and the rest of the country was rooting for them felt validating. It felt really cool. But this time around, I don't want that. I don't know why, but I want this Sixers team. I'd much rather them be hated. Maybe it's the inferiority complex that comes with coming out of the process and losing all of those games to get to where they are and what the league did and how other teams clowned them. Maybe it's that. But do you agree with me? Do you think that this is going to be more satisfying if the rest of the way the Sixers have success and they're hated for it? Or do you want them to become a team where it's like, okay, well, Embiid's playing really well. He's a likable guy. James Harden is a great player. He's never won one. Maybe the country rallies around them. Maybe the NBA rallies around them. And maybe the unlikable Brooklyn with everything going on with Kyrie Irving and Ben Simmons, and we know what he is and stuff like that. Maybe Golden State comes out of the West and they've had their fair share of dynasty time, I'd say. Maybe the Sixers become likable. What side are you on there, Dan? How do you feel? Do you care at all, first, how the rest of like fans of the NBA views the teams?
Nope.
Not remotely.
Not even a little bit. And if you think about it, we can go down a rabbit hole of pretty much fans of all the major sports. Do they really like Philadelphia for anything? I mean, doesn't it always seem like they've got something to complain about? And I'll even take it this time. Ben Simmons goes to Brooklyn, and now all of a sudden, the Philadelphia fans, it was all their fault. All their fault. What? I'm sorry, did you watch any game film? Did you watch the man cough everything up? Did you watch the man stand there and take pictures of every other player on the field and on the floor? No.
See, this is what I'm talking about, though. This type of reaction. I love this. I don't want to not care. I want to let the hate flow through you. I want to hear the critics. I want you to hear the criticism. And as a fan of the Philadelphia 76ers, now we have this opportunity to laugh in their faces. I love that. I don't want anyone to fall in love with this team. I don't want anyone to like this Sixers team. I want them to be feared and hated. And maybe that's not the best way to go about it.
Yeah.
That's probably going to, if they fall short of their goal, have more, well, probably, it's definitely going to have more blowback on social media and on these phone lines and everything.
Like from, we don't get it anyway?
Well, yeah, but it's possible to have a team that's well-liked. Like last year's Milwaukee team, Giannis, for what we feel about him in this city, and I'm a huge fan of the way Giannis Antetokounmpo plays basketball.
Yes.
I think he's everything that Ben Simmons should have been.
Yes.
If Ben Simmons didn't have a 10-cent head.
Except.
But his antics annoy me. The fact that he plays in Milwaukee annoys me. Some comments that they've made up there about like the process and the Sixers and everything. It's not, I'm not a huge fan of Milwaukee, obviously. I'm a Sixers fan. But they were a likable team. That was an enjoyable championship run. I don't want that. I want the team that everybody hates to win it all this year, and I want that to be the Philadelphia 76ers. Maybe that's crazy, but that's where I stand. 610-632-0975. Let me know how you want the rest of the NBA, if you even care what other teams and other fan bases feel about the Sixers, how you want them to be viewed. Do you want them to be hated? Do you just not care like Dan? Do you want them to become the darling, America's darling, so that the championship run feels maybe more fulfilling to you? That, along with our earlier conversation, of course, which was, should the starting lineup be set the rest of the way? Should they stick with the starting five that they ran with last night, and Matisse Thybulle being the fifth man, in addition to James Harden, Tyrese Maxey, Joel Embiid, and Tobias Harris? Now, something else I want to talk about last night real quick, too, because we're talking about the point of hating and everything, the free throws and the foul calls and everything getting to the line, and it's something we talked about in the opening. James Harden and Joel Embiid are two types of players where their skill is super effective in making other players around them better. But they're also passively beneficial. That's what I'm going to call passively beneficial. I'll explain here. It's two things that are outside the realm of just being a good basketball player. And they happen because they're a good basketball player. But the one is the intelligence with which both of these players play off of teammates. It's an underrated part of Harden's game, because we talked about it earlier. He's seen as, when you think James Harden, you're immediately thinking scorer. But Daryl Morey said it in recent comments about how Joel Embiid and James Harden look like they're fitting together, that James Harden is what he'd call a basketball genius. And we saw it last night, how well he plays off of guys like Matisse Thybulle and Tyrese Maxey, and of course Joel Embiid, who's going to be the main focal point. And we've seen what Embiid has been doing this year at his size to be able to have the assist numbers that he's been putting up, to be able to help a team that we thought without Ben Simmons was going to be naturally a little bit regressing. They're both incredibly intelligent basketball players, and that's huge. And then the other thing is a byproduct of how good they are playing off other players, but their own individual talents. The gravity last night that those two guys had was absolutely incredible. So talking about gravity on a basketball court, we saw it with Joel Embiid since he really came into the league. He's a big man who, when he gets into the post, you naturally see the other four players who are not straight up defending Joel Embiid, they sink a little bit. Maybe it's a step or two. And then as Embiid became the monster that he is and turned into the bona fide MVP candidate, the award that he should have won last year, the award that I believe he will win this year, that one step became two steps and three steps off the man, which became double teams, which became triple teams. Joel Embiid in the universe of the Sixers is like Jupiter. He's just gigantic. And the way the guys would sink off him from the point to the post, it created opportunities for guys like Maxey, shooters that they've had in the past, the Seth Currys, the J.J. Reddicks, the other iterations of Sixers teams. And we even saw it this year with Tobias Harris. We already mentioned Maxey, Danny Green. Anyone who played with Joel Embiid that was a perimeter scorer had the opportunity because of that gravity. Well, now, the Sixers universe, they had Jupiter, and then they had, like, I don't know, a couple Earths, and maybe, like, a Mars, and then a Pluto or two. Well, you just added a lot of planet talk, right, Dan? You just added
one planet just popped into my head for some reason. Is Pluto still a planet?
No, I don't believe so. But that's, you just added a Saturn, another giant planet, another huge gravitational pull. And the best part is, he plays out on the perimeter. So now, you've got guys dragged to Embiid, so they're taking a step towards Embiid, and you also have them dragged towards Harden now. There was a point last night where you saw it, and there was a great screenshot that was out on Twitter. I'll try and find it here in a second of who exactly tweeted that out and where that image was from. But it was James Harden at the point. Joel Embiid, I believe he was on the left block, so he was even on that side of the floor, but he was posted up. And then Tyrese Maxey is on the wing on that side with nobody within 15 feet of him. Tyrese Maxey is no slouch scoring the basketball, but on top of that, this year, his averages from deep, my man is shooting nearly 40%. He's shooting 39.5% from three. Guys like that do not get that open in the NBA. And he's just, because of the gravitational pull of James Harden and Joel Embiid, is just all alone on the wing getting wide open opportunity. It's incredible. And it's not just Joel Embiid putting the ball in the basket. It's not just James Harden hitting step back threes. It's not these guys just going to the free throw line. They're both incredibly intelligent. and the gravitational pull that they have to defend them wherever they are on the court with multiple players. It was a joy to watch. It's beautiful basketball, and it's something that's going to create a very, very scary team in Philadelphia.
It was even nice to listen to. I mean, you heard with the montage, Tom McGinnis, who's got Maxie? You know, Maxie's over there reading a magazine, having a soda or something, waiting for someone to, can I play? I'm over here, hello. And he had all the time in the world. Yes, please, yeah. Let me have more of that. Twist my arm.
Joel Embiid said post-game, he was like, I don't think I've ever been that open. And it seemed like, if you watch the game, some of the guys were, at the start, especially in the first quarter, second quarter, some of the starters that were out there, even some of the bench players, whenever Harden was on the floor, he'd whip a pass over to somebody, and they'd almost freeze their tracks, because they're like, shouldn't there be a guy defending me right now?
Yeah, not like the surprise look when somebody decided not to shoot and pass the ball off, but like, oh, wow, is anybody going to? Okay, hey, I'll have this. Thank you very much.
There were 35, 38, 40% free three-point shooters last night that were as open as Ben Simmons has ever been at the perimeter, and that's a guy that doesn't shoot. It was incredible. I just, man, I'm at almost a loss for words, and of course, can't be at a loss for words. This business, we'll talk about it all night with you. I'd love to hear your reactions to the game last night at 610-632-0975. What you do with the starting lineup. Would you keep it the same? Would you rotate pieces in? Would you try other players in that fifth starter spot? Maybe you move Maxie to the bench. Maybe you change some stuff around. Maybe you're worried about Tobias Harris and you think, oh, well, Doc's always liked to keep him out there with the bench role. Maybe you put in somebody else who spaces it. I wouldn't do it. I would keep everything the same. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on what you do with the starting lineup now that we've seen the first game of the James Harden era. But, man, these guys were just wide open last night. And these players, there were points where it looked like they weren't even ready to be as open as they are. It's a great sign for what is to come for this Philadelphia 76ers team. They have 23 games remaining. Let's call it 24 and just give them the 1-0 on the first one. Let's look at it as the full post-All-Star break schedule. Now, Dan, I said previously, I want to see them win 18 of those 24 games. That would leave them at 18-6 the rest of the way. For me, that gets them one of the top two seeds in the Eastern Conference, and it puts them in prime position to have home court advantage in the first two rounds of the playoffs. Then we'll see who they play in the Eastern Conference Finals. I'll take whoever at that point, because they will have made it out of the second round. And they'll have exercised the demons of the Kawhi Leonard shot, the Hawks series, everything like that. What do you need to see from them record-wise in the final 24 games, now 23, because we're giving them the 1-0 already from last night? Are you higher now, or are you keeping your win expectation about where it was before you saw Harden play?
We know they're not going to run the table.
That's, do we?
I was talking
with Coach Camille at the Union game today when we were there. I was there with him and Tyrone. I was like, is there a guarantee they don't win 24-0 and then win 16 straight and win 40 in a row?
No.
All right.
Your number 18 is sound, and I can't talk myself into going either way. Obviously, more would be better, but I think that number you're looking for to get where we really want to be and be comfortable as far as the seeding, I think you're spot on with 18.
Okay, well, they have the 12th toughest schedule in basketball the rest of the way in their final stretch post-All-Star break. I'll have to see if that's updated at all now that they've played Minnesota. I'd imagine it's probably about the same because most teams have only played one game. Some teams have played back-to-backs already. Minnesota was on the back end of a back-to-back coming off a win against Memphis. But I'd imagine it's about that same, right around in that 12th toughest schedule in the NBA remaining for the Philadelphia 76ers. So it's not a cakewalk. They're going to have to play some difficult teams. They're going to have to see like a Milwaukee again. Obviously, they see Brooklyn March 10th here in Philadelphia. It's not an easy road to getting a higher seed, but I think 18 is realistic. And if you had to ask me if I'm going over or under on that 18 number, I'm leaning to the higher side after what I saw last night.
I'll definitely give you the over, but I'll put the line at 18.
Like, there's a realistic chance that this team wins 20 of their last 24 games.
There's a chance, but I think to be practical, let's keep it at 18. But let me change the variable a little bit for you.
Okay.
Could there have been a better team to play against last night for Harden's debut? Or was Minnesota the right team to play? Or what if they had one of the more upper teams in Harden's debut?
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking a little bit in one of the breaks with Tyrone Johnson when I was in doing updates on the Mike Messinelli show yesterday. And we were talking about how great it kind of felt like Minnesota lined up. Not a great defensive team. Back end of a back-to-back, coming off of a big win for them in which they took down Memphis in a game that Ja Morant did unfortunately get injured in. So not playing Memphis the full game at full strength, but still a good win for them. You got it. On the road is interesting. If we're nitpicking, I would have preferred him to debut at home, but that's selfish because I would like to see the fans' reaction, and we're going to get that opportunity. If you won tickets to the Fanatic knockout game, that is going to be Harden's debut. Man, isn't it great when things come perfectly together like that?
Yeah, love it when a plan comes together.
But, yeah, it really was an ideal scenario. Now, there are lesser teams. They could have played in Oklahoma City. They could have played a Detroit. They could have played a Houston. But then it'd be easy to write this off as, oh, well, you played nobody. Minnesota isn't a nobody team. That's not a team that, now they'll give up a lot of points. They don't play a lot of defense. They certainly don't play good perimeter defense. It's the Achilles heel of that basketball team. But they're not pushovers, and they'll probably be in the Western Conference playoffs. So, yeah, it was that right balance of you're not playing a world beater, but you're not playing like one of the toughest teams. Like it was a good balance of everything. So, yeah, I wouldn't change anything. How could you, though? Like, I look back on it. I'm trying to have critiques. I'm trying to look at this and these conversations that we're having. They will come up as they go through their final 23 games now because I don't think they run the table. Obviously, that was a little bit joking. I don't think they'll win every single one of them. There will be points where conversations become pertinent to figuring out how to fill out the rest of the bench, how to set the starting lineup, all of this. But it's hard to look at that game last night and have issues with really anything that went on, start to finish, opening tip, final whistle. It was just a perfect night of Sixers basketball.
Unless if it was at home.
And that's just nitpicking because right. I would have loved to hear the fans. And we'll get that opportunity soon enough. And the Knicks are very much a pushover basketball team right now. They're having an implosion after what was a breakout season, it seemed, for them last year. Julius Randle regressing. So that should be, they play them tomorrow. And then they will get the Knicks in Philly on Wednesday. Both of those should be wins for the Sixers. I also, Dan, though, I want to introduce a side topic real quick before we hit this next break. It was something we talked about prior to coming in here. We were sitting back there at the desk. So I was eating my nice little chicken salad flatbread, big chicken salad guy. And okay. we were discussing, yeah, just throwing that out there. Who doesn't like a good chicken salad? You a chicken salad-sman?
Pretty much. I mean, does it look like I'm picky? You've seen me.
Come on, man. No, but chicken salad, good stuff. Yeah, you seem like you enjoy it. I do, too. But for our side topic, I went to the Union game today. You were talking about calling a game for the University of Pennsylvania today and what you did for one of your other gigs. And it got me thinking about some of the underrated sports experiences that exist in the Philadelphia area. Obviously, everyone wants to go see James Harden play for the Philadelphia 76ers. Everyone wants to go see Joel Embiid just be the best big man that may have ever played in this city. I know that's sacrilegious to the people who say, oh, Moses, oh, Will. Nah, Joe's in the conversation, certainly. Everyone wants to go see Bryce Harper. No one wants to go see the Flyers right now. Everyone wants to go see the Eagles, regardless of who's playing for them. But there's some underrated sports experiences, like the Philadelphia Union, like the Big Five schools and the college teams in this area, like some high school stuff. There's some really underrated sports experiences that you don't really know about until you stumble into it. I was talking to my brother who went to the game with me today, and he was asking me, oh, when did they open Subaru Park, which is where the Union played down in Chester? And I'm like, man, it's been like a decade. It's been
longer than that.
Yeah, a while now, right? How do you know actually how long it's been?
Yeah, this is their 15th season.
15 years.
I was in Center City when the Union's team was announced.
Yeah, this is what I'm talking about. Like, this place has been there. That building has been down there for 15 years. The team's existed for that time. And some people are still unaware. So I want to get, when you call in with your Sixers point, or what you want to get in with us about tonight at 610-632-0975, I'd also like you to share with me what you consider one of the underrated sports experiences in the greater Philadelphia area. For me, it is, and it's not as much of a kept secret anymore with what the Union did last year, but the Philadelphia Union Subaru Park, it was a great experience today. Appreciate them having us down there. I had a great time down there. And Dan, I think yours would probably be in the college ranks if I had to make
it. I got a couple of college stores I can throw at you, and I even got one for the Union, too.
That's awesome. So there's some great stuff out there that's not the Big Four, or even if you want to include the Union, the 5-for-5 teams in Philly. And there's some hidden gems out there as MLB baseball can't get their league together whatsoever. As the Flyers are a dumpster fire, even though they won today, had a nice win against the Capitals. As the Sixers are really the only main show in town, what are some other experiences out there that you love that maybe not everyone has had a chance to check out? That's a beautiful part of our local sports scene. So that also on the table, along with the Sixers conversation, your reaction to last night's blowout of the Minnesota Timberwolves, the James Harden debut, what this team could be going forward, what the lineup should be, what your expectations are. Man, there's so much stuff we could get into, and it's great to have this opportunity, and that's what a star player like James Harden brings you when you add him to your basketball team and add him to the landscape of this city. That is what we have on the docket tonight. We've got you until 10 p.m., another hour and a half running with Dan Fritz here. I'm Connor Thomas. We'll be right back with you after this on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.